to my mother and in memory of my father. Part 1. 1. 4th of March, 1973. Marilyn looked out at emptiness. There was little to see except the water, shifting from black to blue as the sun rose. A clear sky, the ocean, and themselves, a small boat sailing west. At 7 o'clock, Marilyn left her watch on deck and went down to the cabin. Morris was still asleep in his bunk, stirring a little. The morning would follow the certain rhythms of every other morning. Coffee and breakfast, then all the checks and jobs a boat requires. A formula so practiced after months at sea that it had become as automatic as time. Except this morning, in the precise moment that Marilyn put her hand on Morris to wake him, they felt a crack, a jolt, the sound of a gun going off, as if the violence had come from her touch. The noise split the air. Books leapt off the shelves, cutlery flew. They thought of their boat as their child. To hear her wood tear and splinter was like hearing the pained scream of an infant. Up on deck, they discovered the cause. A whale was next to them in the ocean, massive and alive. Water was streaming down the dark cliffs of its body as it twisted and writhed. It looked as if it were trying to climb out of the waves, hauling its dark bulk up, then smashing back down. A meteor landing in the ocean, showering spray. Its tail, 10 feet across the flukes, was beating at the surface in a kind of fury. Blood poured from its body into the water. Marilyn couldn't understand where it had come from. She'd just been up here, waiting for the dawn, and seen nothing but a fishing boat when she'd taken over from Morris at 3. You don't miss a whale. But perhaps you do. It must have risen from the depths just after she'd gone down the ladder and broken the surface right where they were. She couldn't bear the thought that they'd somehow hurt the creature. It seemed uncanny that in the entirety of the Pacific, this would be the spot it chose. What did it matter? There it was. A sperm whale, Morris could tell, from the blunt square block of its head. He knew his whales. It was 40 feet long, he guessed. A good 10 feet longer than their boat. This close, it was difficult to take in. Whales were best admired from a distance, like certain kinds of paintings. He could identify its parts, the blowhole, the lower jaw, the pectoral fin. But they didn't seem to add up to a coherent whole. The creature was out of proportion, unnatural in its size. One rogue swipe of its tail, and they would be cleaved in two. It was monstrous, he thought, only compared with them. The whale was still thrashing, as if it were trying to shake something off or escape its own body. It was dying, Morris realized. These were its death throes. And then it was gone, sucked into the unknown darkness of the ocean. It would likely die down there, blood leaking into the water, alerting other creatures to its presence. Great whites and blue sharks would gather, rip it apart, and feast on its blubber. They stared at where it had been, the surface marked by dissolving trails of blood. Such stillness after a performance like that. Wait, the crack, never mind the whale. Down in the cabin, water was already coming through the floorboards. How long had they wasted up on deck, staring at the whale? Marilyn worked the pump, while Morris splashed around searching for the damage. There it was, a hole below the waterline near the galley, about 18 inches long, 12 inches wide, the size of a briefcase. Morris was shouting, "Get the spare jib sheet, clip it to the corner of the headsail, lower it over the bow, and drag it to cover the hole, then make it fast at both ends to secure it. The pressure from the ocean should force the sheet into the hole, plugging it." He adjusted the sails to keep the boat moving at about 2 to 3 knots, and they hurried back down below deck. Marilyn kept pumping, hoping the water level would now go down. But the sheet wasn't working. The water kept rising.